This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Business Success Tips, where you learn everything you needed to know to start your own business and quit the man, so to speak. Today we have as a guest, David, I'm going to try your last name, is it Lutberger, right?
Well, it's Lou Berger.
It was one or the other.
Lou Berger, okay.
50-50 chance.
There we go. And then we have Steve Chipman.
Hello there.
And myself, Paul Sandeman. So, David, as our special guest who's Skyping in, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, your career? I know you're sort of a national speaker regarding talking to contractors and how they succeed in their business. But can you tell me your sort of journey into being an entrepreneur and how you quit the man and did your own thing?
Okay. It goes back to my college degree is actually in psychiatric services, if you can imagine.
Well, I know contractors are crazy, so it probably helps.
Well, and it helps you work with some of the emotional homeowners, and I'll get there in just a minute. Part of the degree it required, and understand that I took 10 years to get my college degree, so I did not go full-time.
You were pretty slow, 10 years, my goodness.
That's right. So I started when I was 18. I think I finally got my degree when I was 28. And two things happened. To help pay for school, I started working with some contractors, you know, literally just as a day laborer. And then, you know, one thing leads to a little bit of skill. Then it's some light carpentry. Then it starts to build. Then I found I kind of liked the atmosphere and I liked the people. In the meantime, you know, my 10-year college degree, my undergraduate degree required 1,000 hours of field work, of actually working in psychiatric settings.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, by the time I got through with that, I wanted nothing to do with it.
I see.
And it was just for a variety of reasons. You know, the settings are very rough. The ability to see people change, the medication.
You have to deal with crazy people mostly, right?
And not only the patients, but the doctors too. I mean, it's a strange environment, and I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but it was just so abstract and so fluid. That when I was working with construction, it was like we'd start the day, we'd create something, and at the end of the day, I could see what we'd created.
Okay.
And it was very clean, and somewhere along the line, you know, up to just about when I was getting my degree, it occurred to me, I like construction, and I don't really like what I was doing in my college degree.
Well, something so, great. I think most people actually go into something entirely different from the college degree. I know it's like 70-80% or something.
Yeah, it's getting higher.
So don't worry about what you go to school in, because it probably doesn't matter. Just find those lots of girls with cute classes or cute girls. Yeah, classes with cute girls. That's right.
Yeah, maybe college teaches you more about what you don't want to do than what you do want to do, right?
It could be, yeah. Well,
then my degree was perfect, all right, because it worked just the way it was supposed to. And I got out and started working in construction. And honestly, I've actually, and I'll get to where I was speaking, but when I work with groups, I'll ask people in construction, you know, who sat in high school dreaming about the construction business they were going to build? And in a room of 50 people, I've never had more than 3 people raise their hands. And it's almost like construction is probably many of our occupations now are a second, third, or fourth choice. Never planned. It just opens up.
Well, I mean, it's like the guy who gets a degree, goes to work, you know, the gas station during the degree and find out it's easier to run the gas station than it is to go to work and become a teacher or whatever, same kind of thing.
Or someone who goes to sales, too. That's the other thing. There's no degree in salesology, right? I mean, you go to school for something else. You don't aspire. Most people don't aspire to become salespeople.
So David, you were working for someone else, right? I assume as a contractor?
In the beginning. And, you know, I think what happens with most contractors, if you're good at what you do, you begin to feel more and more confident. And I actually got a partner, and we started building homes and doing spec building in the Denver, Colorado area in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then you remember something called the oil embargo?
Yes, I can't remember that.
And it just slammed Colorado. And toward the mid-80s, there were over 50,000 foreclosures.
Sounds like today.
It's very similar in many ways, but it was worse in Denver then than it is now. And FHA and VA decided to wholesale their large inventories. So you could buy a condo for 10 grand, a three-bedroom, two-bath house for 30 grand, and I couldn't build anything for that cheap.
Right.
So I was stuck holding inventory, no work, no money. So very similar to what it is now.
And so here you had no work, no money, and a bunch of houses you couldn't sell. What did you do?
Gave several of them back to the bank.
Sounds like today. I did that myself, actually.
My brother-in-law, my parents. And I kind of took this attitude, I'll wait till things turn around. There was no turning around. This was, you know, a 5 to 10 year turnaround. So I kind of just got deeper in debt, at which point my brother, in about 1988, moved to Washington, D.C. And he called me and he said, you know, I got a row house. I need somebody to work on it. I don't know anybody here. Do you want to come work on it? And honestly, I had nothing else going on. No better offers. My business was upside down. I was upside down. I was single at the time. So I loaded up my truck. And you remember the first scene in the Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah.
So it was literally my pickup with a huge tarp over the back of it with a 10-speed bike tied to the top. What didn't fit on the back of the truck, I gave away or sold. And I drove east.
And, so east, young man.
That's right.
So you weren't lucky enough to have the very first scene, which was shooting a hole in the ground and oil popping out.
I missed that part.
Okay, yeah.
That was a bad scene to miss. Yeah.
I didn't get it in order. I just didn't get it right. And got out to Washington, D.C., started working at my brother's house, got offers from four of his neighbors, and suddenly made a transition from being a home builder to being a remodeling contractor.
And so did you ever do well as a home builder? I mean, did you make a lot of money and then lost it all, or just never? How did it work out for you?
I just never did very good. I was too young. I was too inexperienced. I didn't understand a lot of the uncertainties. One of them, in custom home building, you arrange financing, you arrange plans, you build homes. You know, that can be a 12 to 18 month process to get the money, to get your building site, to get building price sites, to get your building plans approved, and then get the home ready for sale. You know, the entire economy can change in 12 to 18 months. And people have seen this happen in the last 2 years.
So you would say you couldn't stay in business long enough to pay for your mistakes?
No, but I learned, unfortunately, that, you know, being a home builder, it's big possible gains, but also big risk. Because when you've got an 18 to 24 month turnaround, the economy can change, everything can change. And so I literally, and most home builders, carry all this risk. And that's why in this present market, there is no new home building going on. None. Right. Zip. Nobody will finance it.
So what advice would you have, since you hopefully our listeners will learn from your mistakes?
Yeah, so, yeah, a few more.
As well as your audience, I'm assuming that this, your experience helps dramatically with your presentations today, right?
Oh, this is real life. So when I speak to contractors now, it's from experience, been where they are, understand it, been there, done it. Now let's really talk about where you've been, where you're at, and how to work for the future, because in every market, there's always opportunity. And so now, when I got to Washington, D.C., the opportunity opened up and changed when I changed what I was doing.
Okay, so some advice for our listening audience would be, if you're going to be a contractor, it's much better to be a remodeling contractor to start out than being a builder, because there's way less risk, right?
It's a good start. And also, and this is what I got when I got to Washington, D.C., very stable remodeling market. I joined the local association, and I can't say enough about getting a mentor or a coach, because I got together with some very experienced remodeling contractors in Washington, D.C., and they just kind of took care of me for the first 2 to 3 years, made sure I was bidding right, make sure I was promoting myself correctly, make sure that the right building procedures in place. They taught me how to run a business.
So why did they do that for you? Was your good looks or what? Why did they decide to help you?
You know, within the remodeling, it's a very generous community. And honestly, I know it's not this way in every market, but in remodeling, people are very genuine. And when I got to the association and I was, you know, just this young pup coming in, starting over again, deeply in debt, I told a few people where I was at, and in all honesty, they just said, let me help you.
So there's some advice
that took me under their wing.
I guess there's some advice for listeners would be, there's always somebody that will help. I mean, if you ask, find somebody smarter than you are in the business you're in.
Or more experienced than you are. They don't have to be smarter.
That's just more experienced than you are. And then, you know, put them on your sort of board of directors, either formal or informal, and or board of advisors, and let them give you advice. And the important thing is you got to listen.
Yeah, or go hang out where they hang out.
Right.
It kind of goes back to, man, I kept recreating the wheel. I didn't have to. There were people who had done this before who could say, don't make my mistakes. Just do this stuff. And I was smart enough at that point because I'd been beat down to just say, just tell me what to do. I'm broke. I'm single. My truck has rusting floorboards. I'm deeply in debt. Tell me what I got
to
do.
Okay, so you had to, I wouldn't say hit bottom, but sort of emotionally or financially hit bottom before you listened to other people's advice?
Probably. I, you know, probably stayed in Colorado two years longer than I should have. Still thinking that I could magically turn things around. And it wasn't based on anything real. It wasn't until I got to Washington. There was actually a program and things I could do to actually make some real money and start to make this work.
So at the risk of putting you on the spot, can you think of any specific piece of advice that you got that left your own devices you might not have figured out nearly as easily, or might have taken you a long time to come to this realization that someone told you in a word?
Yeah, can I give you the piece of advice that actually flipped the switch for me?
Sure.
I've been part of a men's community, and I was listening. You ever heard of Robert Bly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Robert Bly speaks to men's groups, and I was listening to some audio tapes he was doing. I was working at my brother's house, and he talked about being a man in this society. And literally, he just said, a man must be self-sufficient. You can't live off others. You can't live off of a trust fund. You can't live off of handouts. To be a man, you must be self-sufficient. If you're not self-sufficient, you need to die trying. And for some reason, when I heard that, it was like, I'm done. I'm done borrowing money. I'm done, continuing to make little things work. I will now go to the people who are making money, and basically, I'm going to make this work, or I'm going to die trying.
And so once you had that revelation of be a man, which I'm sure many of us had in different ways and different times in our lives, what the hell did you do? I mean, what was different? You woke up the next morning saying, I'm going to be a man. Well, what did you do differently than you did before?
There was a very established contractor in this men's community that I was involved with. So he was the first person that took me under his wing. And because of that men's community, great deal of trust, great deal of communication. And he said, I'm going to make sure you're successful. And, you know, to this day, he's the one that turned my head and said, this is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to do it. He would take my estimates and review them and show me where I was underpriced. He sent me to estimating and business classes, told me which ones to attend. Very strongly recommended I join a local remodelers association and find other people like him. So at that point, I really was open to tell me how to do, I've done it wrong, tell me how to do it right.
So, and I think another interesting part of this is that you were starting over in a new geographic location to you, right? You didn't know a lot of people other than your brother when you first got to D.C.
So the only baggage you brought with you was that in your mind and that in the back of your truck, right?
Exactly. I got to start over, so I had no baggage in the new area and no reputation.
And no contacts. So that was
contacts.
That's what you had
right.
to build, right? Yeah. And, you know, we're in this economy, I think more people are going to have to move and relocate to fulfill their dreams, right?
And a real good point, I never wanted to leave Colorado, because it's really where I feel most at home. So driving east, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, I'm truly giving up because I've given up everything that was important to me. And I appreciate you bringing that up because, honestly, leaving where I'd been was the best thing I could ever have done. was to go to a new area and start over.
Now, I would like to explain the difference, in my opinion, between giving up and letting go.
Good, good.
Because giving up is a defeatist, like, I'm going to go eat worms, bury my head in the sand, and life is over.
That's not being a man.
No, that's giving up. Okay, yeah. Letting go is saying, okay, I have these relationships, I have debt, I have whatever I need to let go of to move forward. Because I know you probably heard the story about how they capture monkeys, that you drill a hole in a coconut,
right,
and you put something in the monkey once. The monkey sticks his hand in and grabs a hold of the food, and he won't let go. And you just come in the next morning, all the monkeys are just struggling trying to get their hand out of the coconut because they won't let go of the food.
Okay.
Well, I think that's sort of similar when you're letting go of other stuff. And I think our listeners might look in need of what they need to let go of. Sometimes it's belief systems, sometimes it's relationships. But I think intuitively a lot of us really know what we need to get let go of. We just don't want to do it.
Yeah. Well, and your other point was not only letting go, but, oh gosh, I just forgot what I was going to say. Keep going. I just lost my point there.
So you move, you let go of your baggage. What baggage did you bring with you besides the junk in the back of your truck, do you think? Emotional baggage.
Emotional baggage was I'd feel like I'd failed. And there was a lack of confidence in my own ability, a lack of confidence around I had not made the right decisions. I had borrowed money and couldn't pay it back. I continued to build houses when there was no market. So really questioning my ability. And that took, you know, some time to basically say.
So if you lost your confidence and you went out with it, sort of and you did maybe leave defeated with the tails between your legs and going out back east, I guess. Yeah. How did you build that confidence? What did you do to get your confidence back?
Just working. And as simple as it sounds, because I'd spent so much time not working and wondering where money was going to come from, there's kind of like a vacuum. It's a suckhole. And the more time you spend in the suckhole, the worse. So I would take any job. And as long as I was out working, even if it was simple as just cleaning up somebody else's mess, if I was working, you got to understand, Washington, D.C. is hot. And I, for the first time in like two and a half years, I was working every day. That's where the confidence started to grow. You know, I was sweating. I was carrying stuff around, using my old pickup that still ran. But guess what? I was being productive. I was making money. And people were smiling, thanking me, and referring me to their neighbors.
So how did you, were you in your own business then when you were sweating with your truck, so to speak? Was that your own business?
It started as a handyman business, which is I do any job you want done. And what happens, and anybody who's been in construction knows that the jobs always grow. Because once people get a sense of confidence, then they say, by the way, we've been thinking about a bathroom. We've been thinking about a kitchen. So the scope of work started to grow. And as that grew, so did my confidence.
And when would you say that you turned it around and you would consider yourself successful? First, mentally successful, and then more successful in other people's terms?
Probably the mid-90s. I got to Washington, I think 1988. So probably 93, 94. The business had grown. I was doing larger projects, making money. And by that time, I'd paid everyone back. I did not, any personal loans that I had obtained, I paid everybody back. And that was a good feeling of being clean and clear about the whole nine yards.
So David, we only have a few minutes left, but there's always a good opportunity on this show, since we have quite a few listeners, to plug what you're currently doing right now. Who knows, there might be a few listeners out there that are good prospects for you. But maybe you could just tell us a little bit about
your current business
and how to find you on the web and all that good stuff.
Terrific. I appreciate your asking, because what happened after going through all that, in 1997 or 98, I wrote a book called Managing the Emotional Homeowner. And I started speaking because I struck a chord, because contractors who had been dealing with emotional homeowners, which is part of the business, I just understood.
So your college degree comes into play.
It all come full circle. And so I wrote this book. It resonated. I started speaking nationally, being invited to trade shows. It led then to me to to put into a system. First, there was the book Managing the Emotional Homeowner. Then there was something called the Turnkey System for Remodelers. And I put together a step-by-step system on how to build a successful remodeling business. And I just finished a program called the Home Asset Management Plan, showing contractors how to really put together a proactive home care system, doing annual home inventories, assisting homeowners with taking care of their home, each step of the process of maintenance, repair, service, even adding energy efficiency in future projects. And I think the thing that's all come together for me is when one door closes, another one opens. And in this market, if you're in construction, the people who homes have gone down in value, who are not doing the big projects because they're so concerned about things, all these people still own these homes. They still need help. They still have projects. But we need to go to them and show them how we can help them maintain these assets and take care of them. Is if they're not selling them, what do we do to make sure that you maintain your value?
Okay. Now, we're about out of time, but I would like to give some advice to our audience here. We do tech stuff all the time, right? We're like, you know, starting
the little
internet companies,
yeah, exactly.
And this
yeah.
company. We're tech. And if you're looking to start your own business, being a remodeling contractor is one of the ways to go. It takes virtually no capital.
Right.
Most people really suck at marketing. So all you need is a website, which is not expensive. You can start your own business in remodeling. And even though the market is sort of saturated right now, because they still don't do marketing well. So if you can sell your services, put a decent website together, there's a huge, small investment. I mean, a truck and some tools and you're there, and you subcontract everything. And a contractor's license is fairly easy to get.
Yeah.
Compared to other things.
And also, if you're in an earlier stage in your career, because, you know, obviously there's a natural suppression in what people are willing to pay for you in this economy, right? So if you're earlier in your career and you can charge a more competitive rate than maybe people have been doing it for 30, 40 years.
And in my experience, I've worked with a lot of contractors over the years. I really like them as a group of people. And when things are doing well, you can knock down $100,000 to $300,000 a year as a contractor,
yeah.
which is good money. There's virtually no risk, and it's a really good career. So it isn't all tech. You know, picking up a hammer and doing remodeling and building a modern company is a good thing to do. And if you want to find out more about that, you can go to your website, which is?
www.turnkeyprogram.com.
Turnkeyprogram, singular.com.
Singular.com. Yep.
Okay, well, thank you very much, David. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and tell my story.
Okay, thanks. Good evening and goodbye from Business Success Tips.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
And there it is, another episode of Business Success Tips. Thanks as always for joining us. You can check out our website online at businesssuccesstips.org. Send us an email at friends@businesssuccesstips.org. Or if you're a Twitter stalker, find us at twitter.com/BST podcast. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.
Hey, this is Sean Daly, host of Green Talk Radio. Green Talk helps you navigate the maze of green and eco products on the market today and make smarter lifestyle choices at home and at work through informative and entertaining interviews with industry authors and experts, as well as executives from innovative companies around the world. Find Green Talk Radio on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. Green Talk Radio, environmental stewardship through smart consumption.